In my 40-year history of broadcasting, I have never endorsed a weight loss product because most don't deliver until now. Science behind CaloCurb is so compelling that I can support it as a plausible alternative for curbing appetite and enhancing satiety to help you shed pounds. The active ingredient in CaloCurb, Amerisate, comes from a specific New Zealand-grown hops flower, which works by activating your body's own appetite-regulating chemical messengers, including GLP-1, which signals specific areas of the brain to effectively manage hunger in just 1 hour. CaloCurb is clinically proven to reduce hunger by 30%, cravings by 40%, and calorie intake by an average of 18%. CaloCurb is a safe, effective, and affordable natural appetite-suppressing supplement made in the United States with no chemicals, synthetics, or caffeine, and it doesn't cause jitters. Take control of your eating habits and cravings naturally with CaloCurb. For more information and order, just go to CaloCurb.com. That's CaloCurb.com. Use coupon code DH10 for 10% off. That's CaloCurb.com. Coupon code DH10 for CaloCurb. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, part two of our discussion with Rob Verkirk, who is executive director of the Alliance for Natural Health. He's also, is it executive director or what title do you have at
executive and both executive and scientific.
Your scientific director. Okay.
Yeah.
What we've done is we pulled our resources because ANH International is a great organization, our sister organization across the pond, and we pulled our resources to work internationally because this is, you know, there are local issues in the United States that pertain to the United States. There are local issues that pertain to the UK and EU, but we have a lot of common ground, and a lot of our common ground centers around this campaign to push back against claims of misinformation. The campaign is our Free Speech for Health. That's the numeral four, Free Speech for Health campaign. You can find out about it at anh-usa.org. An example, Rob, as we speak, I've just written an article. Actually, I'm in the process of writing an article entitled The War Against Keto. War Against Keto. Now, you've mentioned keto as a realm in which social media is trying to throttle down on keto. Full disclosure, I will tell you that I do not follow a keto diet. Mm-hmm. I don't have to because I'm, you know, pretty metabolically fit. I don't have, you know, high triglycerides or some of the issues that call for a keto diet, overweight, hypertension, prediabetes. Nor do I prescribe it generally for my patients, but it is a very useful tool. And there's a campaign that's ongoing that has tried to impugn low-carb and keto diets. And the antecedent is the campaign against Dr. Atkins. I am well aware, having been on the New York scene and practicing medicine since the 1980s and being a student of diet since the 1970s, that there's been enormous pushback against low-carb diets. Basically, the narrative was, okay, they may help you lose weight. Okay, they may help you with your blood pressure. They may help you with your diabetes, but they'll kill you. Mm-hmm. That was the take home. Yeah. And fast forward like 50 years, half a century, and in effect, they're still saying that. So an example of which, and you may have seen it, the latest article, which is entitled, the study is entitled, ketogenic diet induces P53-dependent cellular senescence in multiple organs. You may have seen the article. The headlines that were generated were, keto diet may accelerate organ aging. A long-term ketogenic diet accumulates aged cells in normal tissues, new study shows. Keto diet may accelerate organ aging. Now, you know this because you're an academic. You've authored, you know, well over 60 papers. You can't rely on press accounts of articles. So you have to look behind the article, behind the headlines, behind the clickbait headlines, because basically what this does, it tries to poison the well against keto dieting, which is ever popular. Millions of Americans are following keto diets, losing, you know, scores of pounds, normalizing their metabolism, even helping their mental health. There's a whole trend now towards the mental health benefits, even in very challenging conditions like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder of keto diets. And, you know, the results are preliminary, but strong anecdotal evidence and preliminary scientific evidence of the benefits. And yet there's a campaign to discredit it. I looked at the study and then I had to look you know, there's this thing called materials and methods in a study. You're very, very familiar with that because it means like, what are the details? How do they do this study? Well, what they fed rats a keto diet, and they found that the rats developed problems in their organs over time. But under materials and methods, I said, well, what do they feed the rats? Because, you know, in some of these studies, they claim it's a keto diet, but it's, you know, 60% fat and 40% carbs. Well, they did feed them a diet that was a high-fat diet. It was 94% fat. What was the source of the fat? It was Crisco. It was hydrogenated fat. What, in fact, you've got a study, and it's made a great deal of play out of it, is that a keto diet kills you. But actually, the study should be entitled, Eating Hydrogenated Fat Kills You, Kills Rats. Anyway.
It's so important to look at the detail. And you know, when we even talk about a keto diet, what do we actually mean? When we talk about a low carb diet, there are no hard and fast definitions.
Exactly.
You know, the PURE study, you know, called anything that is less than 40% of energy from carbohydrates, regardless of the source of that carbohydrate, a low carb diet. And yeah. So what it, and because it was multi-center and global, it compared, you know, for example, the low-carb U.S., the biggest numbers of people as a meta-analysis from the United States who were on a low-carb diet were also the people who ate the largest amount of junk industrially-produced meat with lots of, you know, desserts, cakes, pastries, and all the rest of it.
I mean, and, fatty diet in the West is synonymous with a diet that includes, you know, a lot of, you know, as you might say in your country, bangers and mashed, sausage, processed meat,
processed meat, along with
plentiful carbohydrates, and perhaps some lifestyle factors that are not the greatest either. It's hard to sort out.
The other bias is that in China, you're looking at the poorest people who are eating nothing much more than a bowl of rice, with virtually nothing in it. I'm right in front of me. I've just brought up the Biobank data set in the UK, which is one of the biggest databases in the world, looking at a sample of 208,200. If you look at the top 10 sources of fats, number one in terms of contribution is a category called desserts, cakes, and pastries. Number two is high-fat cheese. Number three is high-fat spread. Number four is egg and egg dishes, then biscuits, then processed meat, then beef, then milk, dairy desserts.
So how can you possibly draw conclusions based on the study?
Like in carbohydrates, it's bananas and other fruit with a number one. Number two is white bread. Number three, desserts, cakes, and pastries again. Number four is white pasta and rice. So again, what the conversation, what the discourse is so often missing is this notion of what in science we call metabolic flexibility. And there are a lot of people who are getting stunning results who say they're using keto diets, but actually they are kind of flexi keto. They are lower carb.
Yep.
They are choosing much, much more carefully, not in sufficient number that you actually see it sort of being mapped out in national statistics when you look at sort of nationwide data. But that's where people are getting really stunning results when they start to be much more careful about their carbohydrate sources. They're starting to move away from ultra-processed foods. They're starting to cook more at home, where they're, you know, if you look at their fats, I mean, people who are on these so-called keto diets, you would expect to see things like olive oil and even coconut oil, a form of, you know, saturated fat, but obviously MCTs in particular, but high up on the list, they don't appear when you look at these big national surveys. Mm-hmm. So the data is entirely confounded by people who are eating junk food diets, and we have very few data on the people who are eating healthy versions of lower carbohydrate diets that are also less processed diets, who are also cooking a lot more or preparing foods at home. You know, it's very interesting when you look at the data on home prepared foods. That's one of the biggest factors. as is people's socioeconomic status, because relates to how much, you know, time and effort and money people are prepared to put into sourcing and preparing the foods that are actually good for them.
So when we talk about these findings in a nuanced way, why is it that you and I can publish articles? You publish often on Substack. I publish a newsletter. How is it that we don't rise to the top of the algorithm on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram? Why is it that the views of the gatekeepers of dietary verity have their views filtered to the top and become the prevailing views? Take-home message for most people is the keto diet can help you lose weight, but in the long run, it'll kill you. I think that's the prevailing view.
I mean,
and that's
what is fascinating is the change that's occurred just in the last year. This is all about the war on misinformation, particularly on health information, mm-hmm. what WHO are calling an infodemic. So in the last year, if you look at the way in which content moderation is going on, it is actually creating these completely random, totally unknown individuals who are critical of a particular approach that is not supported by the mainstream. It may be a non-drug-based approach, such as low carb.
Or perhaps, perhaps they're in the pay of, say, Kraft Foods or Nestle's in some cases.
We've been looking at some of it is working through AI systems, and it's not even doing that. It's just mm-hmm. purely taking people who've kind of bought in. The work of Sander van der Linden is so important. They're people who have just bought into the idea that, for example, low carb and keto diets are killing people. Now, once you have that belief instilled in you, you really feel like, you know, if social media is your thing and you post dozens of posts all the time, mm-hmm. before you know it, you're going to have produced a lot more posts than you and I, who might occasionally put these really carefully put together, you know, treaties on it that look at all the right. science effectively you can. But, you know, that's just one article every now and then. So as far as the algorithms are concerned, you know, we're sitting on our backsides and, you know, Mr. or Miss X out there who is, you know, posting all the time this kind of anti-keto, low-carb information. So that's happening across the board. It's happening for people, who are challenging the use of ivermectin. There's interesting information now suggesting there may be an association with ivermectin use and even cancer. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's being jumped on from great heights. We're seeing this.
In other words, a protective effect, not a causative effect.
Even the games that van der Linden's group has developed, Bad News and Go Viral, take you into an important concept that the public should understand. It's this idea of filter bubbles and echo chambers. So filter bubbles are basically this kind of online space that we exist in that is both pre-selected by the platform according to our interests and subsequently also selected by the user according to the likes and the things that they comment on. So that creates a filter bubble that, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm subscribed to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all the rest of it. And, you know, I've got some pretty broad interests, but they won't realize that the information they're receiving on their feed is completely different from someone who, for example, has never questioned the narrative, who's only ever said, you know, that, you know, drugs are the solution to all healthcare problems. And, you know,
it sounds
natural
like
medicine
really siloing or confirmation bias is that we're all becoming more embedded in our preconceived notions, and we're being fed information that supports whatever we have decided already.
Yeah, it's starting to distort. You see, once you remove, this is why free speech is so important. Once you remove the ability for us to challenge each other over these ideas the way that we did in the real town square, and we're just stuck in our own echo chambers. What happens is you have a very, very divided society, a highly polarized society that is the perfect setting for a drift towards tyranny. And Ron, that's the direction that so we're sort going in.
Sort if we of don't a la stand the Weimar Republic, you know, analogy, yeah. You know, where the communists and the Nazis engaged in street battles, that is, until the Nazis prevailed.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've seen it in history, and that's why we cannot be silent. You know, Erwin Staub, the great psychologist, I think I've mentioned his work, you know, on genocide before. He's done phenomenal work to around the bystander effect, and he basically says, you know, when you try and understand what creates genocide, you know, how so many people in the prevailing governmental authority that perpetrates the genocide, how that happens, it's because people buy into a false ideology. That ideology becomes imprinted as a kind of truth. And that's the danger of this term truth, because, you know, people say, well, I'm a truth seeker. Well, I can tell you that the Sander van der Linden guys, they think they're truth seekers as well. Mm-hmm. So let's sort out what the hell this truth thing is, yep. Which is why I come back to this notion of objective science, mm-hmm. being one of the most important areas that we need to defend. And of course, we see this deviation in even how the peer review system is working yep. now.
You know, an excellent critique paper on this along these lines was offered by a recent guest here on Intelligent Medicine. I'm sure you're familiar with her, Cheryl Atkinson, who is a distinguished journalist at CBS. In fact, an anchor woman who became disenchanted with the networks, or they became disenchanted with her because she began to probe into the pharmaceutical industry and looked at some vaccine controversies. And that was the tripwire. That was the third rail that basically got her excommunicated from conventional journalism. She became an independent journalist, and she wrote an excellent critique along the lines of what you're talking about, called, ironically, "Follow the Science," in Dr. Yeah, Evil quotes, exactly. You know, which talks about how people are being stampeded into scientific silos by influencers, by people who ghostwrite scientific articles on behalf of pharmaceutical companies and then adduce the names of distinguished scientists who take it on for mercenary purposes, for pay. And that this is shaping our whole scientific consensus.
The look, absolutely, she's doing incredible work, and there's a growing literature, believe it or not, that is managing to get through challenging the notion of follow the science. I mean, there's so many errors that were made when we were told we should be following the science. But what's also really interesting is that what's happening, if you look at the Cambridge social decision-making lab's work, it's Sander van der Linden's work. It's turning the youngsters in society, the goal, remember, it's supported by the World Health Organization, into the people that are herding people into these echo chambers. They're saying, look, we don't look at the science itself, because that's only for people at, you know, Imperial College and Harvard, yep. and Yale, and, you know, a few.
We can't look at what the rats were fed. In other words, we'll just take the top line of the studies.
Just trust what they say, yeah. Because those are the experts. But we will use the public to make sure that there is a high degree of conformity. And we're going to make your life really uncomfortable. And we're going to call you all sorts of nasty names, like conspiracy theorists mm-hmm. and anti-vaxxer, if you dare deviate from that norm. And that is a really sad state.
And they have like tons of young people with idle fingers who are sitting at the ready in their mother's basements, ready to chime in along the party line. It's kind of a digital Hitler Jugend.
Yeah, and if they don't, we see it in the political you know, setting as well. That there's a British MP who's spoken out rapidly on mainstream approach, and he's particularly talking now about excess deaths and the possible role of vaccines in enhancing that. And he's talking with a lot of scientists around the world. But whenever he talks in the UK Parliament,
well,
the place is empty. It is empty.
He's being pilloried.
Because the whole thing is televised.
Yeah.
No one wants that face and camera.
Wow.
But at the same time, he's got a lot of this is the in-group out-group war that goes on in this highly polarized environment. The in-group is almost like a scared rat in the corner that's getting pretty aggressive and quite dangerous.
Can we clarify something, Doug? Are you personally, or is the Alliance for Natural Health, either the international or the USA version of it, are we anti-vaxxers? Do we come down definitively against the use of vaccination?
Not.
Okay, let's clear that up.
Yeah, the concept of being anti any medical treatment, you know, is a non-starter from my point of view. You know, one of my good friends has become the vaccinologist here, Van den Bosch. Right now, his priority project is working on an innate immune vaccine, because he says, look, the problem is that and he's been very involved with the Gates Foundation and others, and you know, that they have been preoccupied with this notion of trying to elevate neutralizing antibodies, which is something that takes, you know, at least 6 days or so to happen. And we ignore the sophistication of the innate immune system. Mm-hmm. Yes, it might be less specific.
So I think what you're saying is that we're in favor of safe, pragmatic vaccines. Also, we're against the frivolous use of vaccines, because, you know, they could use vaccines for all and sundry things that pose necessarily a peril to the public, but may enrich the pharmaceutical industry.
If we use the you know, let's we talked about semantics and the importance of terminology and even definitions earlier, that you know, the definitions of a vaccine have changed. A vaccine now is defined as any product that exerts an immunological effect on the body.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all up for vaccines. They don't necessarily need to be delivered in syringe form and delivered intramuscularly or into the bloodstream or anything else. And the vaccine companies are working on multiple different administration systems for them. But the bottom line is that we've got to do it better, and we've got to do it in ways. I mean, from the ANH perspective, we are focused on natural health. So, you know, it's not necessarily
that is our inherent bias. And I think it's a salutary bias, because I think first things first, and then eventually, you know, kind of you wage war with diplomacy, and then slingshots, bows and arrows, conventional artillery, and then nuclear weapons ultimately, if all else fails.
I wouldn't call it a bias. I'd call it just a specialism. That's our focus there. I think bias is a really important term.
Yep.
So, you know, one of the things in good science and good law are the tools that we've used for over 20 years now. And, you know, it's one of the reasons we're so interested in what happens with Mercy versus Missouri. Good science is absolutely critical. It's one of the reasons we need to have free speech. We need to ensure that there is discourse. We need to ensure that scientists and doctors who challenge a particular view aren't immediately character assassinated. They're not challenged by their medical boards and losing their licenses. This is a dangerous place to be.
So tell us about the campaign. Specifically, what is ANH doing? And what happens when we have action alerts around this, like get involved. We want people to support ANH. We want people to read our missives. But what can ordinary citizens do to push back?
Ron, this is an interesting campaign that we've initiated. We call ourselves the initiators of it, because we've been following this space very, very closely. We've designed a campaign that anyone can use. Anyone can use. The goal is to get a million signatures. So, you know, one of the reasons that you look for freespeechforhealth.org And yes, it pings to our NHUSA website and then takes you to our Voter Voice petition page to actually sign it, is because we have assets there that anyone can use. You can also become a supporter. We're doing it in association with two organizations that have a lot of traction in this space, bearing in mind that given the World Health Organization now plays such a prominent role, and we're going to just see how prominent a role it will take after the 77th World Health Assembly meeting goes at the beginning of June.
Which you're representing us at. You're going to
that. We're going to be there. I'll be speaking at a rally there. We're Inspired Network have invited a whole group of us. Robert Scott Bell will be chairing our meeting over there.
There'll be a big
presence of people who are going to be, if you like, sensibly speaking out about it. But at the same time, the campaign that all of us have been involved in to raise attention to the problems with the international health regulations and the pandemic treaty have really bitten now. We have a situation where the UK government has said, we're not playing ball with this. We're not going to sign on. In the United States, we've got a really interesting
situation.
Excuse me,
that's kind of like an extension of Brexit. It's sort of like independent-minded people in the UK have said, hey, there's these sort of monolithic recommendations coming out of the EU Parliament, the European Union Parliament, but we want to maintain our character, our independence, our autonomy.
I think it's the first major win of Brexit, but I worry that if Keir Starmer gets in, say next January, it will be reversed because he's a WEF young leader. He's gone through the whole World Economic Forum young leadership program, and
so that's a little UK inside baseball. He's the Tory candidate. Oh, I'm sorry, he's the Labour candidate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Rishi Sunak, as the Conservative incumbent, has decided against it. And in the US, as you know, Ron, we've had 22 state AGs, attorneys general, who have said they don't want to play part of it. We've also got obviously two states, Missouri and Louisiana, involved directly as plaintiffs in Murty versus Missouri. But we've also now had 49 out of 100 senators saying that they don't think this should go ahead.
But this sounds like it's a treaty, and in the U.S., international treaties require two-thirds approval of the Senate. And
if it's a proper treaty, but there's discussions in the White House to say, guys, this is a pandemic accord. It's not defined as a status. So there's a legal argument going on there as well.
Yeah.
But look, it's a fascinating time, and the problem is that the way that the countries will vote at the end of May, beginning of June, does not necessarily reflect right action or the best for humanity, because there's so many vested interests involved, and because you only need a two-thirds vote. So you've got 194 member states. If 67% or more of those vote for it, it is going through. And then when it's going through, there will be, a lot of the smaller countries who have huge IMF loans are completely disposed to whatever major industrialized countries are doing. They will just play the game.
There's a gravitational pull of something that monolithic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is the difficulty, is that, we're moving into a situation. If you look at that drift towards authoritarianism, that drift towards a kind of tyranny, as soon as we relinquish the ability to have a democratic process where these people become the executors of the public's will, we can kiss goodbye to democracy, we can kiss goodbye to having control over our lives. And, now that free speech is up for grabs, seriously up for grabs, because we have almost no separation of powers between government and big tech and the mainstream media, and now increasingly this sort of higher echelon of academia, Houston, we got a problem.
Yeah. All right. So the call to action is go to anh-usa.org or go directly to the Free Speech for Health campaign at freespeechforhealth.org and sign on and sign the petition, be a part of this, continue to get updates. And if you...
We've got a whole bunch of themes and assets and everything that you can use. Just one of the things we would say is that, you know, we're targeting 1 million signatures here. And this is just stage one of the campaign. We want 1 million signatures. We're then going to go to Mountain View outside of San Francisco, where the Alphabet offices are. And we're going to convene, request a meeting with Alphabet to say, guys, your medical misinformation policy, we know it follows exactly what the Nobel Prize Summit was suggesting you do, but it makes no sense if you really are, you know, have any care of the public interest. And we're going to show them exactly why it is impossible for the designated institutions, the WHO and these national health authorities, to have sufficient arbitration capacity over the incredibly complex field of the health sciences. It is a huge domain. When we look at, you know, environmental and social and socioeconomic impacts, these are not areas that governments are deeply involved in. They've been involved in a limited number of them. And we saw the kind of bias. I mean, the public has got to see the kind of bias that occurs. You know, when we were told, hey, guys, don't worry, we will have the solution. It'll come in the form of a genetic vaccine that had never been tested in the public. Now, just from an efficacy point of view, it didn't really live up to, you know, the initial statements of 95% plus effectiveness. Now, that's one of the limitations, because governments and corporations now are essentially one. They've formed this corporatocracy. It becomes ever more important that we have independent organizations and players and associations. You know, if you want to find out about nutrition, you want to talk to someone who is a CNS specialist like you, Ron. You know, someone who is part of an association like the, you know, ANA that you are also very involved with. You know, ANA will know a whole lot more about nutrition than, you know, most of the folk in the, you know,
NIH. And has a policy of refusing contributions from the meat board, from the dairy board, from the wheat board, from, you know, the major ultra-processed food makers, unlike the ADA, which often is a handmaiden to some of these food conglomerates. Great stuff, Rob. And, you know, as a final note, this is a Zoom call, and I'm going to stand up so that you can see what's on my T-shirt. Can you read it?
Hey, okay. Look at that.
It says,
fun to feel good.
Yeah. It's fun to feel good. It's fun to feel good.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm wearing that T-shirt today in commemoration of our call. Great. So great stuff. Once again, anh-usa.org. Also, the campaign that we're talking about is freespeechforhealth.org. Godspeed, and I look forward to our next sojourn in the U.S. where over a glass of dark beer, we can recount our cycling exploits.
Absolutely. Rob, Ron, as ever, so good to talk to you, and thanks for giving weight to freespeechforhealth.org, such an important campaign to become part of.
Indeed. Thank you, Rob Fricker. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com, drhoffmanstore.com.